Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Hello, Quakers, and welcome to another episode of the QuakeCast. Today, we have a relatively new mapper on the scene. He's only been around for about a year, but he has made some strides. That is JCR.
Yeah, JCR is a talented mapper and a modder. He's got his jump boot mod, and we'll hear a lot more about that. And he is also streaming a lot and just really involved in the community. The other thing is, you know, you've heard of a potato computer, but you know, JCR also deals with real potatoes. We'll get to that.
In addition to that, we're also going to be talking a bit about guns here. It seems that JCR is a gun collector, and we get into not only his collection, but also how do you build a gun? And it's something that's interested me the first time I've heard about it. Gunsmithing. Tell me about it. We're going to get into that right now.
I didn't have my first home computer until like maybe 2000 or 1999. I was like 10 or 11. So I remember being at Toys R Us like 1998 maybe. It was sometime after Quake came out, you know. And I remember being at Toys R Us, and you know how they had like a video game section with a little kiosk? And I remember seeing a game on the demo kiosk and just being like, whoa. What the hell is that? It must have been close to my birthday because I was there with my parents and we were getting myself a birthday gift, if I remember correctly. My memory is terrible, by the way. So I remember seeing what I would later discover was Quake. So I remember seeing Quake and I remember seeing like an ogre and then like the nail gun and stuff. And I was like, wow, never seen anything like that. And then I proceeded to buy some completely different game that is completely forgettable and no one ever remembers ever again. It was called BioFreaks. I don't know if you guys know. It was like a fighting game.
It was a fighting game, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like my 10-year-old mind was like, oh, wow, this is really cool. Amazing. Let's get this game instead.
Yeah, BioFreaks, baby.
Yeah. It was so, okay. Then I got my first home computer. Like, my dad bought a computer for work for the house. And he brought home, like, I don't know if you guys remember, like, this giant, like, demo disc collections for, like, office software and all kinds of stuff. Well, one of them was a shareware copy of Doom. And I was playing the shareware version of Doom. And,
cool.
You know, with, like, the just keyboard only at the time. Because what the hell is a mouse? And yeah, I mean, I guess one thing led to another. I eventually rediscovered Quake as a shareware download on some like DOS games, like free game website. And eventually I would end up buying a full version of Quake. And I mean, I guess the rest is history.
So was that a revelation for you, finding out what that game demo was from when you were a kid? When you were like, oh, yes. This is that game.
Yeah. This is that game. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I remember it was the little logo, because what the hell was that thing, you know?
Yeah, I definitely have had that moment with movies and stuff where I'll catch a scene of a movie and I'm like, I remember this from when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So yeah, it's a cool feeling. So you got into Quake, you played it, you loved it, and all these years later, you started mapping for it. So what brought you back to Quake?
Well, here's one thing. After figuring out the full version of Quake, that was like opening up a can of worms. Because then I would, funny enough, I would play through the full version of Quake and then go back to Doom. Played a bunch of Doom and all the expansions and, you know, extra episodes. What came next? Well, then I discovered like all these little websites where people were uploading like custom stuff. Like I remember Quake Terminus, which I think is still up. QuakeTerminus.com or something to that effect.
Yeah, it's still there.
So I remember downloading stuff there. Like I think I played Insomnia pretty much early on, you know, Abyss of Pandemonium and a couple of the other like early mods. Of course, this was a couple years later, you know? And I would proceed to play a bunch of Doom stuff. And for the longest time, I mean, I was into video games pretty much early on. And I guess it wasn't until I started, I was working at GameStop, you know, already, you know, many years later. I worked at GameStop and I got kind of tired of video games. It was like, oh, I was playing all the new releases and all that jazz. And I was like, hey, you know, I should go back and try these games. And that's when I realized, like, okay, now you have modern source ports and you have these huge communities of just people making stuff. And and Half-Life was a big one for me too. Half-Life and all of the mods that came from Half-Life. It's a lot of stuff to keep busy. But yeah, I mean, I guess I got distracted with all of like these new games and kind of like Half-Life, Quake, Doom, those games that had like these really big communities kind of fell to the back burner for a little while and came back. And you know, for the longest time I would go on Funk Message Board just as like anonymous and just download stuff people make.
Okay.
Likewise for Doom, I would go on like the Z Doom forums and Doom World and stuff and just pick up things that people have made recently and just play through that because I kind of got jaded with all these like new games. And Doom, Quake, a little bit of like Duke Nukem and like other first person shooters of that time period were really nostalgic to me since they were like the main, like the meat of the video games I was playing.
So you said you were jaded with the newer games. You mean to say like you're kind of tired of the way they were, or you weren't digging them anymore?
To some extent, like I was seeing like a pattern, like where things were getting formulaic, you know, these big budget titles like Call of Duty coming out every year and you know what I mean? That sort of thing. And
yep.
No disrespect, of course, to those games, but they weren't doing it for me anymore. So yeah, you know, for the longest time, I was just like sitting on the sidelines, downloading maps and stuff. And, you know, video games kind of became like just one hobby and not really like the hobby. So I don't know. I mean, I guess I was just hanging out doing that for a long time until I saw Dump Truck's tutorial videos. And I guess that kind of put me over the edge. But let me backtrack because for a while, actually, my friends and I, like my local friends, we would play Arma, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with Arma. It's like a simulation. Yeah. So Arma 3 comes out and my friends and I get together and I started making custom scenarios, which I mean, I played Operation Flashpoint, which was like the game that came before, and I was making custom scenarios just for myself. But then when Arma 3 rolled around and I managed to coordinate all my friends to get it, I started making custom scenarios for us to play amongst ourselves, like co-op stuff. We did some team versus team. And, you know, that's actually another game that has a really big community of like custom map, not map makers, but like custom mod makers. So I guess that was maybe my first stint in like actually making custom stuff. So then, yeah, I discovered the tutorial videos Dump Truck made, and I was like, oh, you know, because at that, you know, when I think when you start making those tutorial videos, my friends started having kids. So now I'm kind of finding myself with a lot more free time than I had before. And no one to play my custom scenarios like before either. Yeah, so started learning the tutorials and really I recognize how powerful Trench Broom is. It's like
it's an amazing
piece of software.
Yeah, I wouldn't be as involved as I am if Trench Broom hadn't come around. I'd still check on Quake every few years, you know, and download like you did, download things, try things, try mods, whatever, even download editors and just kind of poke around. Oh, this is kind of neat. But as soon as Trench Broom, I was like, oh, forget it. I'm back. I'm totally back and I've never gone away.
It was like, it was attainable. I don't know how else to describe it. It was like, wow, I can do this. Like I might be able to, you know, take some of these weird ideas I have and make them into a map.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was all fun and dandy. And it wasn't until I actually made Meyer Prison and put it up on Funk. You know, getting feedback maybe on the like beta versions of it. Mm-hmm. When I started getting feedback, that's when I got hooked.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like, wow, okay, now I'm seeing how people besides me play this stuff. And it was fascinating. And like the feedback that I was getting, you know, oh, you should try this instead. Oh, don't do this. That kind of thing. That was kind of a revelation, because now I don't see video games the same way. Like FPS games in particular, I don't see them the same way. Now, right. Like I'm looking at like, and I've even caught myself doing it a couple of times where like, let's say I'm playing a map in Quake. I'll just walk into a room full of monsters. I'm ignoring the monsters and I just look around, like look at the ceiling and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh wow, look what he did there as I get attacked by a fiend, you know?
Yeah, that's happened quite a few times, especially on Arcane Dimensions maps, where totally. I've looked around and just gone, oh my God. Like, ah!
Yeah.
Totally. That's awesome. So now, at this point, you are now streaming very often. In fact, I venture to guess that, you know, RC has got a little competition here. you seem to be very prolific and really involved in the community and everything. So what is this, just a natural progression, or was there another aha moment that you're like, you know what, I'm gonna stream, I'm gonna get more involved? Like, do you have and also the second part of the question is, is there like an end game? Is there some more things that you're going to be doing that people would be interested in checking out?
Well, I would say that there was, in fact, another aha moment. And that was that the Quake community is a tiny fraction of the size of the Doom community.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
The Doom community is kicking. I mean, they got a lot of crazy stuff coming out all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing the Quake community, which I think is a more novel game. Because Doom is like the perfect game. Honestly, I truly believe that as far as first-person shooters go, Doom has the perfect formula that lends itself to just a million possibilities, and it's always interesting. So Quake has something different going for it, and that's the atmosphere and like the mood of the game,
mm-hmm.
which takes me back. Like when I first played the shareware Quake, it didn't have the soundtrack. When I played the full game with the soundtrack, that was like, whoa, I see what's going on here. It's more than just like a scary, creepy game. It's like, it is the scary, creepy shooting game. but the revelation I had was actually that I can do something to help keep this community alive in, you know, whatever minor way I can. And maybe even bring in more people the way that Dump Truck has. Maybe not to the same extent, because the utility between a tutorial video and me playing through someone's map isn't, I don't think, exactly the same. But the interaction between mappers of like, okay, I'm going to jump in here, I'm going to make a map and let's see what people think. And playing someone else's map and giving them feedback. That kind of give and take relationship was kind of big for me. So I thought, all right, if I can just maybe make videos showing people, you know, more than just a demo, because sometimes, you know, things can get lost
mm-hmm.
in like the little text messages of a demo or something. If I can like show people how I'm feeling while I play it, it's like you have a buddy who's trying out your map with you, you know? Like sometimes for some of my maps, I'll harass my brother or a couple of my friends to like, to play it, like, hey, come on, man, I know you're busy, but just 20 minutes, please, I need you to try this.
Right.
So kind of the same thing, but over the internet, I guess, internationally. And you know, YouTube is, it's very comfy. I don't know about you guys, but I enjoy, sometimes I'll sit on the couch and I'll just run the YouTube app on my TV and I'll just watch like Quake playthroughs.
Oh yeah.
While totally. Sitting on the couch, it's awesome. So, I mean, I guess that was it. Is just appreciating the contributions of others to this community, and making up for lost time, because I kind of just sat around and lurked for a long time without really contributing. So, you know, now that I guess have some knowledge, I'm making up for lost time by pumping out a bunch of maps.
That's cool. Yeah, and I can relate to the making up for lost time thing, because I didn't touch Quake single player hardly at all back in the 90s. And coming back to it, I was like, you know, there's like this whole other world of Quake that I just pretty much untapped on my side. So I can definitely relate.
Yeah, and that's what it is. I think even today, it's like there's a lot of untapped potential in the engine. And during my mod jam experimentation, I realized it really was a rushed game. There's a lot of stuff that's like hard-coded in there and a bunch of like... Yeah, you probably know tons more about it since you did the Progs dump.
No, well, no, I'm laughing because I learned that, you know, you come across something you really want to do and then you're like, ah, I can't do it. I mean, this is so simple. There's something so simple and I just can't do it because it's hard-coded, and it would help so much to be able to do that. But, you know, that's why I chuckled at that. But, you know, I'm still in Quake C kindergarten. you actually made an item.
I must be in preschool.
No. You made an item. Did you do the models on the boots, or did... Because I was going to say, did you make the model and do the code for your jump boots? Because that's a great segue, by the way, into that project. But
yeah, definitely great mod.
Thank you. Yeah, the boots, actually, if you look carefully, you'll recognize them. I ripped them off of the biosuit.
Oh,
that's awesome.
That's cool.
That's
I love it.
You know, there was only a couple months for the mod jam. So I was thinking, all right, well, with my like limited programming ability and knowledge of Quake C, what can I make in the short amount of time that will be clever and play to Quake's strengths? And more importantly than not, what can I actually do? You know, I didn't want to get like bogged down with this ambitious project that, you know, I don't even know where to start with. So I thought, okay, well, let's manipulate part of the movement system, which in my opinion is one of Quake's best features.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where it came from. But yeah, I wasn't going to learn everything about Blender in like a couple weeks. So I just learned how to like cut and delete stuff. And, you know, I managed to cut the boots off of the biosuit, make it its own thing and reskin it.
Yeah, I haven't touched any modeling stuff for literally, let's see, what year are we in? for 10 years. Well, no, she's 2001 probably. So 18 years ago. So yeah, I haven't touched any of that stuff. And I intentionally just go, no, it's too much. There's too much going on. I can't even get started. So hey, you just taking that little time to chop off those boots it stays on theme too. I mean, it feels super authentic. So I don't see any problem with that at all.
Yeah. I mean, I guess there wasn't any risk in it not looking right because it literally taken from another existing asset.
Right.
I don't know if I've mentioned it, but Sock is actually integrating the boots into AD, and I think he's going to be remodeling it, so giving it a fresh coat of paint. And he also fixed one of the big bugs that the boots had, and that was that the boots as I had created them, they had a glitch where if you didn't jump off the ground first, they wouldn't work. So like if you dropped off a ledge or something, they wouldn't activate.
right.
That's gotta be a huge honor though for Sock to be like, hey, I like your boot thing. Let's put it into AD.
Oh, I was thrilled. He actually reached out to me and was like, hey, we're putting the boots into AD. Is that cool with you? What? Of course.
Yeah,
that is really cool.
That's some validation right there. I mean,
it really is. And I told him I would fix the bug. It's just I didn't have time and I was busy. And, you know, before I could even crack open the code again, he had already solved it. It was probably a very trivial thing I missed.
You know, people see Sock as this amazing mapper, but they don't understand, like, his coding. He's like on another universe level of coding, Quake C, because I don't mess with AD because I'm look at it and just go start drooling, going, what is this? I mean, it really was a rewrite of the underlying code that controls the game. And some of the things he's done, it's got to be frustrating for him because there's a lot of power under the hood that people do not use. And oh, yeah. You know, I considered doing AD tutorials, but to be honest with you, I'm just not qualified. It would take me so long to get acclimated with all those possibilities that he's coded in that it would be counterproductive. So, but yeah, AD is on the next level, you know, just it's so powerful. But some of the reasons why Sock kind of grabbed your boots is because McLaganog, Andrew Yoder, wanted to do a jam with the boots. So that will happen eventually, right? We're still going to do a jam with the jump boots.
Yes.
Because that's going to be fun.
I spoke with Yoder, and although Sock doesn't have the source code for it yet, because as I understand, he's still working on it. Mm-hmm. He's done a lot of stuff with it. Like you're going to be able to customize, among other things, you'll be able to customize like the strength of the jumps and stuff. There's, you know, different versions of the power up where like one will give you a single air jump. Some will give you multiple air jumps. One gives an infinite, you know, ability to just constantly be jumping in the air. Kind of like, you know, the space jump from Metroid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
But I figure if I can, because I want to learn it too, right? I want to figure out what was causing that glitch. If I can fix that and just I'll give out that source code instead. Or whatever comes first, you know? Sock mentioned he's happy to share that stuff when the time comes.
Very yeah, cool. Yeah, that's something to look forward to because that map was I got to be honest, all you know, honesty, I did not finish the map. I got to a point where I was like getting a little stuck, but it was really fun. And the overall
the showcase map for
yeah, correct. Yeah, the showcase map that you made, and it was a beautiful map, and the gameplay was really cool. But at the time I was trying it, I was just I think I got stuck. So I got to revisit it, but.
I got some feedback saying it was maybe a little too challenging, especially for like what's supposed to be an introduction.
And for old guys like me too.
Well, you know, one of the ideas behind the boots was for the older Quake dads to be able to reach secrets in places that, you know, require more agility.
Yeah, exactly. I was watching your Jam 10 stream today, and I saw that you tried that one jump like four times in that one area that with the yellow armor above the nail gun, and even you couldn't make it.
Oh, that's right. On my map.
On your stream, yeah. Your recent map.
Yeah, that one was that one definitely could have used the boots.
Yeah, exactly.
I had a really good time with that one though. When I remember when I was playing through it, I was just like, oh my god! Like the idea that, you know, we're gonna have a jam for this is pretty exciting because it fixes one of the things in Quake that oftentimes isn't very fun and it feels very meticulous. But platforming in Quake is usually never that fun. And I remember playing yours on this stream, however long ago it was. And just jumping from thing to thing and figuring out how the jump boots actually worked and just being like, oh my god, this is actually fun. You fixed something, which is, you know, hard to do in Quake nowadays.
Oh man, I love it. I love the platforming in Quake.
Really?
Know, like there's yeah, like, and I don't think I'm fixing something. I think I'm just adding an option.
Oh no, for sure. I'm just throwing that out there. But you know, all I'm saying is like it's really fun. But that's surprising. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the platforming in Quake. I like the physics and stuff, but a lot of times maybe it's the maps that come out, but the platforming itself usually feels kind of meticulous to me.
There's for Quake 3, the defrag maps, if I remember correctly, where like mm-hmm. all it is just using the game's mechanics for movement to mm-hmm. traverse the maps and reach the end. That sort of stuff. I mean, I never really got into it, but I was always fascinated by it. One community name that comes to mind is Roman.
Right.
I don't know if you guys are familiar, but he does like these crazy speed runs, and it's all taking advantage of the game's like built-in, like just the game's code. Like, there's nothing fancy going on there. So that's more, I guess, more insight into where that mod came from.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
and Counter-Strike. Counter-Strike was another game I played a lot as a kid, and there were these maps called KZ Climber maps, and mm-hmm. it was like, I mean, you guys know Counter-Strike, you know, there's good guys and bad guys, and you got to defuse the bomb or rescue hostages. Well, these KZ Climber maps were like completely focused on using Counter-Strike's movement mechanics, which are a lot more restrictive than Quake's, to climb, like, I remember one that was like a giant, like, tree. It was like a map of like a giant tree, and you had to like climb up it by like platforming and all kinds of stuff. And if you fall, you had to start over, and there's like a little timer. And
does that use the crouch jump too? Because there's crouch jumping in CS, right? In the old, So crouch jumping changes the physics just ever so much when you're, I can't even remember how. Do you jump farther forward, or is it a little tiny bit higher when you do a crouch jump?
I wouldn't say I'm qualified to say.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't remember. But there's a big difference between a normal jump in CS and then a crouch jump as well. So
right, and you could also like move the mouse to get like a circle jumps and get more air control the way you would in Quake, but it's a lot more restricted.
Right. Well, cool.
But yeah, that's kind of where that came from too.
Well, so plans for the future, like besides your jump boots and things like that, what are some, I mean, do you have any dream projects for Quake?
Well, you know, like I've been making, like most of the stuff I have released has just been participating in speed map packs and jams. Mm-hmm. So I've had several conversations with people, and I've been thinking about it myself too. And I've decided, like, I'm going to take a back seat to the like speed maps and jams, and try working on some individual releases, of which I have one right now, my first release. So, you know, I want to try and make something more serious and less confined by time, and you know, see how that's received. Another thing I'm doing, as you guys probably know, Newhouse is doing a series, I guess, of maps, and he asked me to make a map for him. It's going to be vaguely inspired by my Map Jam 10 entry.
Nice. So this is the is this the blue episode he's working on?
I don't know how much he feels comfortable with me saying, but yeah. Okay. He's doing fair more enough than one episode.
Oh, wow. Oh, he is. That I didn't know.
But yeah, so my map is going to fit in there somewhere.
Cool.
I think I know what you're talking about, but I'm not going to say anything else.
I don't want to step on anyone's toes.
Of course. No, and you don't. Fair enough, yep. Don't be stepping on Newhouse's toes, man.
That's right.
No, that's, Newhouse should get on here and talk to you guys about it, because I know it's very exciting and he's very ambitious.
I'm not kidding. He was probably second or third person I asked, and he's like, no. But we'll talk him into it. Yeah, we'll talk him into it.
Some community-wide peer pressure.
Word to the wise, you know, just a little side note, just so people know, we do ask all of the people you suggest, so just so you know.
Right, we do. I mean, Sock suggested some people recently, and I haven't got down the list all the way, but I've asked a couple people, so yeah. We're gonna keep going. We're gonna keep going on this thing.
So that's cool. You're working with Newhouse. You got the jump boots thing going on. And it sounds like you want to break out and do something on your own, like something that's not a speed map pack. So any little tidbits about that you can give us?
Yeah. First and foremost, I'm going to be doing a new version of a map of one of my Christmas Jam maps. I want to do like a full version of that with the jump boots in AD.
Oh yeah,
cool.
So in a way, it's going to showcase all the new features that Sock has worked on, and it's going to be in fully integrated. If you guys remember that one, it's not the Aztec, you know, jungle base. It's the all metal tech base one.
It's funny because the jungle one's the most memorable one, but yeah, I know. I did take a look at both of your maps, and both of those entries are really cool.
They were
very creative. Like I said, you've come a long way from Meyer Prison. You, because basically it was you had a lot of great gameplay ideas in that, and you were definitely telling a story, which is so important to all the maps. And that's one thing I really have to work on in my stuff, the kind of visual storytelling and what's going on with the underlying theme of the map.
Yeah.
But like, all those ideas were there in that first map. It was just kind of your brushwork and some other kind of technical issues that you've already, you know, surmounted by now. So, I think it's a real treat to play your maps. If people who are listening haven't checked out, you know, your Christmas Jam stuff or these, you got to stop what you're doing and download them. Cause they're fun. And Jam, and we mentioned Jam 10. That was really entertaining. Like, I loved the intestine stuff, and I did find some of the secrets. It was pretty cool. But I know RC hasn't played that yet, but basically RC, it's this kind of this creature that's in, and JCR can explain a little better, but this is creature has kind of invaded the area, and there's like giant intestines and body things everywhere. But go ahead and explain a little more about that, just to whet people's appetite.
Okay, so yeah, I replayed Insomnia because, well, after Ionis announced on the Quakecast that there was going to be a new jam for, like, based on Insomnia, I was like, oh yeah, I remember that one. I went back and downloaded it, and honestly, I wasn't very excited. I remember as a kid being like, wow, this is crazy. But playing it now, I'm like, oh, there's a lot of base stuff here, which I like base stuff, but that third map was very different. And I was like, okay, this is kind of like Zestroyer, which for me, I remember playing that one as a kid and being kind of spooked by it too. So it kind of was like this marriage of like Zestroyer and Insomnia. And at the time, funny enough, I was doing a lot of yard work while I was coming up with the idea. So I was cutting a couple of like branches off of like a tree to let in some sunlight on a little garden that I got going on. And I was like, oh, this is it. You know, Quake guy, Ranger has an axe. Why not make something like where he's like going through like something and cutting down stuff to like traverse an area, you know? And obviously like flesh and stuff was kind of the idea. So I was like, all right, Ranger's going to use his axe to cut through flesh. And it's going to be like this big monster. It's going to like scream in pain every time he hits it. Yeah, that's it.
Very visceral. Very visceral sounding. I got to play this one.
Yeah, you did a great job on it too. I mean, it is a lot of fun. It's very cool.
I also took some inspiration from Speed Mac Pack 182, I believe, which is the organic one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And funny enough, Artistical made a map on that one where you're going into a monster. It's kind of like a worm, I guess. You're going in through its mouth and coming out of its rear end.
Yeah.
I can never tell the difference.
Yeah. So it was like, okay, I could do something like that for parts of the map and, you know, still have some architectural bits. So, yeah, I mean, basically it's like this giant monster that is built into like a place. I don't know. I don't know if you call it a temple or a castle or something.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, you know, for me, I guess the visual aspect has only been as important as I've needed it to be for like, I guess, visual storytelling. I've always looked at like the standard id1, like the vanilla maps as like, okay, this is my visual standard. Because all right, I still don't think I can reach the visual quality of some other, like the maps of other guys. So for me, what's more important is, okay, well, let me work with what I actually know and let me see how I can tell my story like that. Additionally, I think a little bit of abstract, you know, like leaving stuff kind of ambiguous lets the player fill in the blanks, which takes me to another part of the map, Jam X map, which was the soundtrack. And one thing I realized was that, like, depending on the soundtrack that you pick for the map, it's going to be suggestive to the player regardless of what they're seeing.
Oh, sure.
It's kind of like in film where, you know, whatever the scene is, the music in a way is dictating it at a subconscious level, I suppose. So if it's a sad scene, it could be like, let's say, I don't know, a guy is reading a letter. Now, if there's sad music, then that's going to, in a way, without, you know, non-verbally, it's going to suggest, okay, he's reading some sad news or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So for me, it became more about like, okay, I need to find a good soundtrack, a good music track that's going to complement this thing and fill in the blanks that my visual abilities aren't going to, you know, be able to achieve. And yeah, I mean, that's one thing I recognized also between the Doom and Quake communities was that pretty much any Doom WAD that comes out has like custom music for all of their maps. And that's something lacking in the Quake community, but there, I mean, I know there's good reason for that, but that's just one observation I had made.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah. I mean, we were talking about visual storytelling earlier, but we don't talk a lot about sound effects and music and stuff, you know, how that actually affects your gameplay experience, because it really does play a lot into it. You know, you gave a really easy example of like a letter or whatever, but Quake is a lot harder because there's a nuance in the sort of like evil that's within each level, because every level is basically like this evil place, and there's always going to be some kind of, you know, Trent Reznor inspired music playing in the background, whether it's custom or not. And you know, so it's going to be really tough to pick out those nuances of like, okay, what sort of feeling and vibe am I going for in this map? Because I've heard people do it before where they'll pick different tracks depending on you know, exactly how you should feel during this map. You know, like, for example, the very first Quake map plays the Quake theme, right? So you're just kind of like, okay, we're getting going here, and you know, the energy's high and everything. But as the maps go on, you get these more ambient tracks that are a little bit more slower pace. So no, it's actually a really cool and interesting topic you bring up.
That being said, also, that's not to knock on the soundtrack for Quake, because that, right, even now it still holds up. I mean, the problem is, like, I guess for guys like us who play everything, you know, how many times you're going to hear the same track and get that same feeling, you know?
Oh, right, right.
So that's why I feel like the introduction of custom music can make the difference. And I feel like it did in the case of my Map Jam 10 map, which Amorpher, the author of that track, he graciously offers up his music for any mappers who want to use some of his stuff. And it's very Aubrey Hodges inspired, you know, like Doom 64 type.
Oh, yeah. I love his stuff. I listen to his stuff when I map. I bought all his I actually asked him, like, is there a way to buy all your stuff at once? And he's like, no, but I'll put that up there. So I went ahead and bought everything, which was really cool. And he was really like, oh, well, thank you for buying. I'm like, hey, you know, you did all the work, and I enjoy it, so why not? So, but he's great. And I totally plan on using his stuff, because I love, as soon as that came up, I actually recognized the song you use. I'm like, oh, I know this one. And it's a quote unquote song. It's much more of a kind of a sound design, soundscape.
Right.
Kind of thing, which to me, you know, I like the metal stuff that people enjoy in Doom, but that's not my first go-to, you know, thing. The Quake soundtrack, believe it or not, is my favorite soundtrack of all time. I do get tired of hearing the music, though. I totally agree with you, because vanilla Quake has real strict limitations on how you can, you know, change the songs. And it's unfortunate that you can't just put any file name in there. I would love to. I mean, you could do it in a console. You can play whatever you want in the console on a lot of these source ports, but that's kind of an extra layer. And then also you get to choose your song when you include it. It's kind of a no duh thing, but it's something that people neglect. And I did a track once for one of the jams, and people actually enjoy it. You get a lot of feedback. I don't know how much feedback you got on this one, but I got feedback on mine. I was like, oh, cool. You know, people didn't hate it and turn it off, you know?
Right. Cause you could also pick something inappropriate, like just something that doesn't fit right, or at least that people aren't receptive to. So choice of audio, I feel, is undervalued a little bit.
Yeah, I would agree. No, I think that's a good word to use. I think it's just one of those things where it's when it's bad, you notice it. When it's good, you don't. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, yeah. And when you don't notice it, it's adding something that you
exactly
would otherwise not have.
It sort of puts you in the zone or the mood that you're going for, which is, I mean, that's a huge accomplishment in and of itself.
Yeah, and I'm an editor, and I, you know, music is literally half my job. But picking the right music for a scene, like you said, or for a promo or a trailer or whatever, it's so crucial, and it does all the heavy lifting. So, you know, but anyway, we've already covered those ground. I'm just repeating same stuff.
No, it's all good points. But well, you know, JCR, we went into a lot of your background with Quake, but I'm kind of curious about some of the other stuff that you put in your bio here. You describe yourself as a computer plumber. What is that?
My day job, I'm a network engineer. So
okay,
it's essentially a computer plumber because networking is the plumbing between systems.
I like it. I've never actually heard that term used before. Shows how much I know. Also says that you're a big firearms guy too. So you sounds like you inherited a good amount of guns and stuff. Like, what's that all about?
I mean, my grandfather.
Yeah.
He took me shooting when I was 13, and he was like a big gun guy. Even back in Cuba, where he's from, he had to get out of Dodge with my parents. That's why I'm here in Miami.
Okay.
And when he did, I mean, one of the first things he did when he saved up some money was buy another gun because they took his in Cuba.
Gotcha.
So I guess over the years, he was a big action movie guy. So he'd buy guns for, like, that he would see in the movies and stuff. but yeah, like, he took me shooting when I was 13, and, you know, I was hooked. I had liked guns before because of video games. So, you know,
sure,
when he showed me, like, oh, wow, he has a USP, just like in Metal Gear Solid. It was like things were starting to connect, and, you know, that became like something that we bonded over for many years. Yeah, and I guess I was a little surprised by the arsenal he had amassed over the years. But he's so no longer
is this
with
totally
us, so
like,
now it's mine.
Oh, that's cool, though, that he left it for you. Was this sort of like he had like a secret hidden closet that he would open and, you know, show like the body vests and grenades and all that stuff?
Not quite. You know, it's not like in the movies.
Yeah, but that's what I'm envisioning.
Your grandfather was John Wick, face it.
Right.
It was, like, it was funny because in his house, like, they would have like there was like a little altar with, like, you know, religious icons and candles and stuff. And then underneath would be like a ton of guns just like stashed in like, you know, wrapped up like in little cloth or something, and little boxes were hidden in the closet and under the bed and stuff, you know, very haphazard. But that was the way he rolled. That was the way that I think a lot of Cuban families here roll. I mean, everybody here, you ask any Cuban family here in Miami and they got guns. It's part of your culture.
Gotcha.
So, you know, like, one thing he had in particular was a shotgun, a pump shotgun with a bandolier, you know, and it was like a cheesy bandolier, like in an action movie, that would hold shells.
That's great.
But the shotgun he didn't have a stock. It was like not that it was cut down or anything, but it was like something from like one of the movies he really liked was John Woo flick. Man, the name escapes me. You guys know John Woo, I'm sure.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So a hard boiled or something. Right. So it was like a short shotgun with a pistol grip, and it was very unpleasant to shoot. Now that it's mine, I put a stock on it so I could put it in my shoulder. And actually, it's one of my favorite guns.
That's funny. So have you shot all of these guns that he left you? Have you experienced all of them?
Well, here's the thing. After shooting with him for so many years, I've kind of taken it up on my own. I've bought my own guns. You know, like a lot of my friends also own guns. So it's something that it's actually like a hobby that I practice regularly, actually. Pretty much any Saturday morning, like, I'll be out at the range if I can. I've also built several guns that has just been like stuff I've done on my own, just little projects here and there.
Right.
But, you know, that was a different time when I had a little bit more disposable income, because I've since moved out of my parents' house. So, you know, I don't have the same, cash flow available as before.
Right.
And, you know, these parts can get very expensive.
I bet.
So what did you build, though? That is really intriguing.
Well, the first thing I built was a lower receiver for an AR-15, which is like the Honda Civic of rifles.
Believe me, we've heard a lot about it in the news lately.
Yeah, and you know, it's a very controversial subject, no doubt.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't like getting political, but, you know, why don't you have one? Everyone should have one. It's the only way to ensure, you know, your family's safe when the demons invade. Anyway, so after I did that, I built a couple of 1911 handguns, which easily became my favorite pistol ever. I shot one time, never again, and then I was like, oh, I'm just gonna build one, and the rest is history. But like I said, those projects get expensive.
But wait, I mean, how do you smith a gun? I mean, are you right, like smelting the thing and pouring it into it? I mean, no. I don't even know, dude. I don't even know how this would work. I don't
Is it
even
more
know.
Like a car model kit? You know, you get like a kit and put it together, or
so. There's lots of manufacturers that just make parts, and the parts by themselves won't fit together because they're purposely made oversized. So what you do is you take the parts that you want, and then you have to smith them together. And that usually entails like a lot of filing and sandpaper.
Grinding and stuff,
Yeah. In order to basically sculpt them together and marry the parts.
Gotcha.
There's actually a lot of information on the internet about how that's done. And, you know, it's not anything, you know, that's there's no legal gray area here. It's completely legal. I know that's something that a lot of people always wonder, like, oh, how are you allowed to do that? It's like, well, you know, you can do anything you want to do.
Maybe not anything, but I understand what you're saying.
Well, okay. You could do illegal things too if you want.
Sure, you could. But we're not going to advocate that here.
so you probably shouldn't.
I'm an upstanding American, and
totally,
you know, I will abide by the rules and laws.
Well, you sound like a very, very responsible gun owner too. My question with the building of the guns, because it's legal, do you have to have some sort of a license though to own that after you build it, or how does that work?
No. As long as you don't sell it, you don't have to report anything.
Okay.
It's just yours. If I were, for example, to like sell one of my pistols, I would have to get a serial number inscribed on it. And then sell it after that point, because you see, this gets into like legal, like mumbo jumbo. There are parts that are considered the firearm here in the United States and parts that are not. So you can have all the not firearm parts delivered to your home. And then like the one that is the firearm that needs to go through like a licensed dealer. Right.
Gotcha. Okay.
But if you can also build it from like what's typically an 80% completed firearm, and you could complete the last 20%, and then you'll have the gun right there. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get into all the legal nonsense, but
no, that's okay. I actually find it pretty interesting because it's a side I don't know anything about, and the gunsmithing thing is super interesting too.
Yeah, I have a question for you, and I told you offline that I was going to have a question for you. When I was a kid, and it's just, I'm completely, and now I just want you to know, I am a gun owner, but only one, and it's a long gun, and I haven't fired it in many years, but it's just one of those things, like, it's kind of a heirloom family deal.
Right, okay.
It's a, what is it? It's a 22 long, I can't remember if it's, I guess it's a Remington, if I'm not mistaken. I haven't seen it in a while, but it has a cherry wood stock, so it's beautiful. But, nice. So you just, and it's one of those ones where you kind of twist the this doohickey on the bottom of it and kind of slide it out, and then you load. I think it holds 12 rounds, something like that.
Oh, like a tube magazine.
A tube magazine, exactly. Okay, so that's what I own. But when I was a kid, I was in Boy Scouts, and we went shooting one time. Nothing bad happened. It was great. It was really, you know, educational at the time. But I remember firing a 7, and I could be getting this wrong, but I'm almost positive, 7mm rifle that was homemade, basically a kind of a someone like yourself who kind of put this thing together. Does that ring a bell to you? Because I've never really ever seen anything like it. It was almost like a shotgun. It would tilt up, you put one round in it, close it, and boom, fire it. But it was the whole thing was, you know, the barrel was all anodized. It was really slick looking. It's almost a science fiction thing. But when I was a kid, it was just so like, this is the coolest gun ever.
Right.
So does that ring a bell to you? Like 7mm rifle that's homemade?
I mean, I know there's a 7mm caliber that's very popular for hunting. I'm not entirely familiar with like the hunting side of things.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I mean, could be. There's so many different varieties of ammunition and guns that use them.
Yeah, it was just a kind of a one of a kind thing. I've never seen anything like it again in my life. Although I don't shoot too much, and you know, whatever. I'm a supporter of gun rights, and I'll leave it there. there's more to it than that, but you know, it's all good.
Yeah, I mean,
if you're a responsible citizen and you're obeying the laws.
Yeah. I mean, I might be a little bit more radical in my thoughts, but you know, I'm a friend to all. That's all I'll say.
Good man. There you go.
Good man. Yeah, that's a good way to put it for sure.
Very cool.
Yeah. So I mean, I've bought a bunch of guns that are like from games and stuff. Like I have a Mark 23 from like Metal Gear Solid. I also have a USP from the same game. I played a bunch of like tactical shooters when I was a kid. So, you know, like a lot of my collection kind of came from that. But
I could see that for sure.
Kind of stripped down a little bit because I don't have room in this safe anymore. You know,
God, you're starting to worry me, man.
I'm starting to get scared.
Yeah, I get a little worried.
Or you get a bigger safe. There you go.
Nah, I would have to carry it upstairs, and not going to happen. I could only do that once.
Yeah, exactly. No,
I understand though. I have a family member who is a avid gun collector, has a ton of guns, and I get it from that perspective. It's like it's like any other collection, right? It's like you get totally really into one hobby. Yeah, exactly. And I see his collection, and it kind of is freaky because it's like all of these things are, you know, they're kind of built to kill, which is fine. I mean, you know, weapons have been made since the existence of man. But
absolutely,
when you walk into anyone's house, though, especially this particular family member's house, and just see this wall of things, I'm just kind of like, oh, okay. I see.
Yeah, I have a funny little quick story about gun safety. I have my father-in-law lives in Montana, and he's got a gun room, and it's floor to ceiling with all kinds of stuff. And he hunts, though. I mean, so he's a hunter, so it's more along those lines. And you know, us California, you know, my little family, you know, Californian kids, they barely ever touched guns before, so. But my brother-in-law had shown the kids shooting before at another time, and they remembered the gun safety. So my eldest child kind of did some safety things, like, is it loaded? Like when grandfather was handing him, and he's like, of course it's not loaded. What the hell kind of question is that?
And so
my kid goes, but Uncle Trav, you know, he told me that's part of it. You have, whenever someone you don't know is handing you a weapon that you've never touched before, you really should ask them, is it loaded? And so he comes on loose on my kid and kind of, sorry. And then he handed one of us a gun, and it was loaded.
Of course.
Did you ask?
No,
we gotta ask.
I think he handed my the eldest, if I remember correctly, he asked it, and they racked it, and it was like, oh shit, it's loaded.
That's funny.
Yeah, wow. So, yeah, granddad,
it's not loaded.
You gotta
but
lay
this
off
other
the
gun
hooch,
is.
Grandpappy. Yeah, exactly. You gotta lay off the hooch, grandpappy.
No kidding, right?
But yeah, yeah, we went out shooting. It was cool.
It's a discipline that requires a lot of attention and strict adherence to the rules.
Oh yeah.
And you know, it's funny because you go to any public range down here and you see people violating those rules, and it's not like they're hostile. It's that they're a little ignorant. So
yeah, they're just having a few beers, you know.
No, nothing like that.
I'm kidding.
that's severely frowned upon.
Yeah, I would imagine.
I can imagine. Yeah.
That's funny.
But you know, it's stuff like that that like that's what people remember, the dangerous, you know, experiences and not the good ones.
Oh, totally. And that's the unfortunate thing, too, is that there's millions of people who are super responsible, and you get, you know, the one dumbass who does something, and it, you know,
everyone
one
remembers bad the dumbass.
Exactly. Yep. One bad apple always spoils the bunch. But on that note, we're going to go to a side of your hobbies that is completely different. Gardening. It says that you've kind of gotten into that, too.
Yeah. Like I had mentioned earlier, part of my inspiration was from, like, for Map Jam X was my garden, because, you know, using a machete to cut, like, tree limbs and stuff. But yeah, I'm growing peppers. I'm starting to grow some potatoes. Those ought to be ready in a couple months. Lemon. And I've gained a whole new appreciation for plant life, because when you realize, like, okay, that tree that's dropping a ton of oranges probably took like 3 or 4 years to get to that point.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Crazy.
You
know?
Yeah.
And like, I guess I had never thought about that, you know, living in this concrete jungle of Miami. You don't really, like, you see trees and it's like, oh yeah, trees. No. It's like that tree is probably like 15 years old in order to provide the shade that it does. And it's been a very fascinating experience. That's something that my lady and I have been cultivating together. And looking forward to, I mean, I already harvested some peppers, and that was quite nice. So I'm looking forward to some lemons probably in a couple years, probably next year.
Nice. Yeah, that's actually what I was going to ask you is, you know, what's it like to grow in Miami? Because I'm actually up here in Michigan, and, you know, the climate obviously is completely different. I didn't know you could grow potatoes in Miami, though.
Well, you got to tend to the shade a little bit, or the light exposure, because we've actually torched plants from too much sun exposure.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of funny where in some places, I guess you need more sun. Here, it's like we got too much.
You should send some up here. We'll take it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I completely relate on that topic, too, because, you know, within the past few years of us, you know, moving in together and getting our own house as well, you know, we've started really getting into, you know, growing plants and we're into this. We're getting into a situation here where we're going to be installing some hedges, you know, back by the garage and stuff like that. So we're totally getting into this whole thing that you're talking about. And you really do gain like a huge respect for nature and the way it works. And you actually, at least for me, I started kind of caring about these plants, like, oh no, I don't want this one to die. I got to bring it in. You know, it might frost tonight. So it's been pretty fun and a pretty interesting experience.
I don't even know what frost is like. I've lived down here my whole life.
Even though today we have like a 75 degree day in Michigan, just last weekend, they said, you know, be careful because overnight we're going to have frost, even though it's like been 60 to 70 out. That's Michigan for you.
I would imagine there's a lot of greenhouses in Michigan for this kind of stuff, right?
Oh, yeah, there is. A lot of nurseries, lots of greenhouses.
Not in Miami, though. I doubt it. The whole place is a greenhouse, for God's sake.
Actually, there's a pretty large, like just south of me, there's a pretty large agricultural area. Funny enough, like on like the shooting range that I regularly go to, it's through a bunch of farms, and they're constantly rotating crops and growing different things. Where was I going with that?
And they have greenhouses.
There's greenhouses. No need for a greenhouse because Miami, like this whole biome is a greenhouse.
Right.
Like I go outside after, like I'll take a shower, get ready, like let's say to go to work. I go outside and I'm already sweating before I even hit the car.
Oh yeah, I believe it. I believe it. So have you been? Hey, listen, have you hooked up with Killpixel ever? I mean, I know he's not in Miami. He's down in the Keys, if I recall correctly. But hey, man, I always think like Quakers who live in the same general vicinity really have a responsibility to go connect in person at some point, if possible.
So yeah, I'm gonna hold you to that. I mean, the Keys, you know, it's like a big vacation spot. On the weekends, a lot of people travel from here in Miami down to the Keys and back. Yeah, I mean, I would be happy to have a beer with him.
Yeah, well, maybe make it happen, man.
Yeah, I'll call his publicist. We'll get it set up.
You Quakers have to connect. I know some of the guys in Berlin connect every so often. So that's what brought it to mind. Yeah, so that's kind of cool. You know, I went to QuakeCon quite a few times, and only really one time I met someone that I had a friendship with online, because it wasn't as prevalent back then. It was more like, well, I mean, it was, but it was kind of a slower pace message board type of thing. Yeah. And then, you know, that and I'm talking early days, like 96, 97-ish. So it was still message boards and, oh, I recognize that guy's username, as opposed to now where it's just like all, you know, real time. We can voice chat. I'm sure within the next couple of years, you know, Discord's going to have, you know, kind of a FaceTime type of deal, I would imagine. So, you know, it just moved so differently. But I remember meeting this guy, and then one guy came and visited me in California one time. He was in the state and he was fairly close by. I'm like, hey, come on over. So we had the little kind of mini LAN party, and I kicked his ass in a couple matches, but then he got
sure
his.
Sure you did.
Yeah, no, I did.
Big and talk,
he
big
was
talk.
Really good. He was really good though. He turned it around pretty quickly. But I kept one of the demos. I still have it, and I watch it every so often because it was the one time I was really good in Quake, and I was like, I'm
you're
keeping
like,
that demo.
How about you post that demo on YouTube? Peak.
I will. I'll put it up there.
You should. That'd be great.
I will. No, I totally will.
Oh yeah, you know, he was really good, but I was kicking his ass 300.
I'm telling you. So that the match was great because he was kicking my ass, and I came back and just was destroying him, and then he came back and just completely annihilated me. But he threw his mouse a couple times, which was my mouse, by the way. He threw. Wow. I had him cussing at me. You don't hear that in the demo, obviously.
Bad. It would have been great.
But that was the only time. I think the only time I was dominant in Quake multiplayer, probably ever. You know, so there you go.
It didn't help that you were yelling "eat it, bitch" every time.
Correct. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
His name was the Lord too. The Lord.
That's not narcissistic or anything.
Yeah, if the Lord is listening, dude, hey, get back in touch with me.
The Lord is always listening, dumb truck.
Oh, that's right.
You know, that reminds me of like Unreal Tournament. I remember as a kid getting Unreal Tournament for the first time, and like I was playing with bots, and the bots would like curse at you, and they'd be like, "Die, bitch," and all kinds of stuff. And I was like, "Oh my god, what is this?
I gotta turn the speaker down. My mom's gonna freak out."
No, it was a little too real. Getting killed by a bot and getting taunted by it. I don't know. You just reminded me of that.
Well, JCR, it's been great having you on, buddy.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you guys for having me.
Well, thank you for all the streaming and all the maps and everything. As you're doing awesome things, and can't wait to see those jump boots and AD. It's going to be very, very, very cool.
Yeah. Totally. Let's see what else is around the corner.
Yeah.
I would pitch it though. Next time you talk to Sock about the boots, throw it out to him that maybe he should add some socks to the boots.
Yeah.
You know, as a little joke.
Like a little Easter egg.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a brilliant addition.
This is RC. Thanks for listening to the Quakecast. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/watchGGRC.
And I'm Dump Truck. You can find me on YouTube. Just search for Dump Truck _DS.